eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Zurich Classic. And it wouldn't be a team event if I didn't bring in my teammates. Let's start with Greg Ducharme. Greg, what up?
First of all, Rick, happy to be on the team. Second of all, I want our new intro to be your intro. I think next time, instead of Jacob should unmute your mic and let you just design our new jingle.
The dirty little secret is, yeah, Jacob mutes my mic. Thank God when we play that countdown there, because I'm usually saying stuff.
And singing. Today was the new rendition. I heard a great new intro that I think should be part of the show. I hope Jacob was recording on it.
Well, hopefully he was. Not rounding out our team for today, it's Sia Najad. Sia, how's it going?
Rick, how are you? A man of many talents. I recently learned about your singing voice. Thank you for that. Glad to be here and glad we get a team event. I think this is pretty cool, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, there's going to be at the top here, we'll spend some time on this format because it is unique. It is going to play a little bit into the DraftKings, not the scoring so much, but there is just a few differences that I'll want to talk through. But before we do that, I've got things to give away, including partnering up CBS Sports and Westinghouse to give away two portable power stations. Those are super handy. I'm not even kidding. Super handy. Two portable power stations over the next month. Just go to cbssports.com/hole-in-one to enter. We'll put the link in the episode description. The contest ends on May 24th, and that is cbssports.com/hole-in-one. One, no purchase is necessary, 18 plus only. And of course, you have to be in the United States. Sorry to everyone else out there. Okay. Zurich Classic. Gentlemen, this is the only official team event that we get on the PGA Tour calendar. And here's how it's going to work. So for each round, they're going to be playing in a different format. There are 80 teams, which means there are 160 golfers. The first and third rounds are four ball. So Greg, that just means everybody plays their own ball, and whatever score is best for your team is the score that you take. So for example, Greg and I are a team. Greg makes a birdie. I make a par. We are taking Greg's birdie. That's all it means, Greg.
Right. So you'll see this termed as foursome and four ball. Now, foursome, there's a great way to remember this because it can get confusing. But once you know this, it's not confusing anymore. Foursome, you play some of the shots, which is alternate shot. Four ball, you play your own ball. So it's an easy way to delineate between them. And the four ball is, of course, Rick, as you just mentioned, the better ball of two. A lot of people call that best ball. Best ball is the proper term is when that's with a foursome. So it's the best ball of three or more. It's better ball when it's two or more. So, hey, a technicality, but something that maybe you find valuable one day.
I remember it like this. Four ball, there's four balls in play. Everyone's playing their own ball. And foursome is the other one. That's how I remember it.
Okay, there you go. Well, now you know you play it some of the time. You play your ball some of the time.
All right, so that other part of the time, so that's rounds two and four are going to be foursomes. That's the alternate shot. So see, the way this works is exactly what it sounds like, but each golfer is going to tee off on half the holes, either the evens or the odds, and then the partners will alternate shots. So see, if you tee off, I'll be hitting the second shot. You'll hit the third. I'll hit the fourth until we have a score for our hole. Obviously, better scoring likely to come in the four ball stage, the best ball stage, as opposed to the alternate shot. And both are very important.
Both are very important. And it's the reason why you can't lean on, you know, one of two golfers in this event. Obviously, both golfers are going to be put to the test mostly on, frankly, Friday and Sunday. And it's why there's certain teams that are really interesting, like a Colin Morikawa and a Matthew Wolf. You know, do you think Matthew Wolf's going to come around? Because if you don't, then that's potentially a problematic team to pick. And there's obviously plenty of teams like that. That just happens to be the first example as we scan the team. So it's really strategy is really interesting here because you can play it from a lot of different angles. So I'm actually curious to see how you guys are going to play it because I have my own sort of fit here.
I mentioned 80 teams of two, the top 35 and ties will be making the cut and playing on the weekend. And Greg, if this wasn't confusing enough, this event hasn't always been a team event. We've only had 3 years of this. 2017 was the first year that we went to team play and we did not have this event in 2020. So this is the first time we've seen it since Jon Rahm and Ryan Palmer took it down in 2019.
There's a couple of things. When this first started, I wasn't overly excited about it. I come from a place where I love the 72 hole stroke play. I've always believed that 72 hole stroke play gives you the best finish on Sunday, which is why the PGA Championship went from match play to stroke play. It creates the most drama and it's the most intrigue. And I've never been a big believer in different is we need different. Because I'm such a fan of 72 hole stroke play. That being said, this event has kind of piqued my interest in a different way. It's not a major championship. It's not a World Golf Championship. We know that. But at the same time, there are some very interesting teams in this. And it's exciting. I think this show is a big factor. I look at this leaderboard. I look at this board, the field list and who the teams are, and I get really excited about it, which is a nice change of pace. It was kind of one I wasn't overly excited about at the, a couple of years ago when they instituted it, but I think it's turned out to be a pleasant surprise. So I'm really looking forward to the event this week.
Yeah. We spent like 15 minutes on Sunday night just going through the teams because right. It was fun, right? It was like, how are these guys even playing together?
It's fun.
It is fun. If you like scoring, you're going to like this a lot because the last three winning scores have been 26 under, 22 under, and 27 under par. Guys are going to go low. They're going to go low during that best ball format, that four ball format. And they actually made what I thought was an interesting little transition. I think 2 years ago, you used to end on four ball. And now the final round is alternate shot, which Sia, that's kind of what you were alluding to, where there's going to be some nervous shots in alternate shot. And there's going to be some opportunities where your playing partner puts you into a weird spot or like I like that on Sunday as a hair more drama instead of each guy playing their own ball and trying to shoot a 59.
Oh, I love it. In fact, the way they started this was so obviously like a poor decision because you're right. I mean, let's just go back to the Colin Matthew Wolf thing. You know, if Matthew Wolf puts Colin in a tough spot and it's them and, you know, Danny Willett and Tyrrell Hatton, for example, like it really brings the drama alive when it's like, well, we can't just choose here. Matthew, this is your shot here. So I think Sunday is going to be really, really interesting. And by the way, I think the team event, I think people are underplaying the team aspect, and that's kind of what we're talking about. But there's so much drama when you have a, quote, team event and you have one guy leaning on another guy or multiple guys. And we see that, of course, in the Ryder Cup and events like that. But I just think the drama with two guys instead of one having pressure is going to be so much more, quote, dramatic than it would be on just a one-on-one day.
Yeah, you really got to earn it on that Sunday for sure. Now, the way this is going to work for DFS, specifically for DraftKings, generally the same. You're still going to pick six golfers to stay inside your $50,000 salary cap. You are still going to earn points based on birdies and, you know, streaks and things like that. The only caveat here, Greg, is that DraftKings is not going to allow you to choose two golfers from the same team and that each partner is the same price. So when we look at Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, they're both $11,700. You can only choose one of them, but it doesn't matter which one you choose because both golfers are going to get the same number of fantasy points no matter what they do. So there's really no difference in this situation between choosing Xander over Cantlay or Cantlay over Xander. If you have one, you have them both.
Right. So there's no advantage. My understanding is they basically don't need to have both. They could get away with the Shoffley Cantlay team, but this gives them an opportunity to put both players' headshots in there. It probably creates a little more space for them. When you click on things like the game log or latest news, you can get individual news. And that's the only reason, as I kind of sifted through this, that's the only reason I could see why they would put both on the board. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. You're basically just choosing teams. And I think it's a really good way of doing it.
And see, I imagine it was a lot easier for DraftKings to institute a rule that says you can't pick two of these guys. You can't pick two guys from the same team, instead of instituting some new software where you're going to score the players differently and try to do it in match. I mean, basically everything is the same other than you can't pick two guys from the same team.
Yeah, it would be any alternative would be kind of impossible, especially when you're talking about alternate shot. I mean, does one guy get credit for two of the four shots made on a par five? It doesn't really make sense. So they really did it right. And I agree with Greg. You know, at first blush, I'm like, well, why do you have both of those guys? Why don't you just have a team? And maybe there's on the front end or the back end, there's something technologically that's an issue there. But more importantly for me as the consumer, I want to click on those game logs sometimes. And if it's just two guys in one little slot, I'm not really going to be able to do that, or there's going to be a tricky way to do that. So I actually really love the way they did it.
All right, let's jump into this. So the pricing is a little bit different, and what you're going to hear me reference a lot throughout this is team combined averages. So what I've done on my site, rickrungood.com, is I've basically combined both players into one team. So you're going to hear me quote birdie or better percentages or strokes gained. That's going to be for the combination of each team. It actually does create some interesting dynamics. And gentlemen, we have a big 11K range. Let's just start there. So Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, they are the most expensive in the DraftKings player pool. They're 11,700. Our defending champions, John Rahm and Ryan Palmer, at 11,500. Colin Morikawa and Matthew Wolf, maybe the most interesting team at the top, 11,003. And then the Aussies, Cameron Smith and Mark Leishman, are $11,100. Greg, let's just start with these 11K guys. I think there are question marks with Xander and Cantlay. I think there are question marks with Morikawa and Wolf. I mean, what are we doing here in the upper tier?
So I agree with you where there are questions. I think there's a couple really interesting teams in here. By that, I mean all of them, I think, are quite interesting. So I guess I'll start with the first thing that came to my mind, and we were talking about it a little bit earlier. So I'll start with Morikawa and Wolf.
Yeah.
Now, Matthew Wolf is a very, we know what Morikawa is, right? We know how good he is tee to green. We know how steady he is tee to green. And you can think about that and say, that's a great combination. If you have Matthew Wolf, who struggles to get the ball in play. And I find this interesting too. Matthew Wolf is sixth in driving distance, but at the same time, he's 201st in strokes gained off the tee, and he's 204th in driving accuracy, which tells me that he's missing big off the tee. Because there are a lot of guys that hit around 50% of their fairways, but Will Zalatoris being one, yet they have very, very, very solid strokes gained off the tee rankings. So that means that he's missing big. And the combination in a team event, Phil Mickelson is a guy who misses big off the tee, but he is a great teammate because his short game is so good. So for instance, if he hits a tee shot into the woods and Keegan Bradley punches out to the fairway, just to name an example, well, now you have, if you're Keegan, you've left the best wedge player, arguably, you know, a top five wedge player of all time, you've left him with a wedge. So Phil, although he makes a mistake, can save the mistake. Where Matthew Wolf, his weakness is not only driving accuracy, but around the green. He's also outside the top 200 strokes gained around the green. So he struggles in those two areas combined. And that makes it, I think that puts a lot of pressure on Morikawa. The good thing is Wolf's a good putter. And I think I do expect a little spark from him because he's a team. It's a team thing. And I think you'll see a little pressure relieved from Wolf and he'll be loose and let it fly. So I think it could work. But that being said, I think the team that I'm left with here, who I feel the most confident about, is Ryan Palmer and John Rahm.
Yeah, let's let's start there, because I think they are very clearly the best team. And Ryan Palmer is, he has made more money at this event, Sia, than any other player since it went to the team format. And the reason for that is not only did he win with John Rahm, but he also finished fourth here with Jordan Spieth. That happened in 2017. And let me illustrate something for you, Sia, because this is what I think the biggest thing is. So in 2017, Ryan Palmer was basically an average player on the PGA Tour. He gained 0.06 strokes that year. He was almost dead average. Okay. Finishes fourth with Jordan Spieth that year. 2019, a lot better, a big improvement. Wins it with John Rahm. He gained about half a stroke per round that year. Well, look at 2021. He's gaining nearly a stroke per round. This is the best version of Ryan Palmer we've ever seen. He makes a ton of birdies. He's sixth on tour in birdie average. He makes a ton of eagles. He hits a ton of greens. Like this guy to me is like the perfect partner in a team match. He never really gets you out of position and he can rack them up in a hurry.
Listen, Rick, anytime you get an opportunity to have one of the best golfers in the world be your teammate, and that guy gets to play alongside John Rahm, hopefully you caught up to that joke. Yeah. Ryan Palmer is always disrespected, but now we get him in a mode where, you know, he's priced really high because he's with John Rahm. But the story here is both of these guys are as close to a lock, if you can afford them in your lineup, as you can get. Because when you look at the rest of the 11K range and even the 10K range, I mean, I think almost every team pales. I mean, there's some upside here. Like, I like Cam Smith and Mark Leishman. I think they're going to play really well together. That's probably my second favorite team in this range. But John Rahm and Ryan Palmer, I mean, I don't know how you stray away from this. And to your point, I mean, yeah, almost gaining a stroke versus 2017 is pretty staggering there.
With these two birdie makers together, I agree. I mean, John Rahm is having his best year with irons that he's ever had on the PGA Tour, at least from what I saw. And I think tee to green is the same. And it's another great year off the tee, which he has had a great year off the tee every single year on tour. So yeah, as you can see there, this is a great year for him. Yep. Tee to green, and it is his... Yeah, it's tied for his best, basically tied for his best, and definitely his best approaching the green. So that's a great thing. But at the same time, it's not the year that he had in the previous 2 years with the putter. And I think that gets relieved at this golf course as well a little bit. Rick, I was reading an old article you wrote about this golf course, how the greens were a little... Yeah, it was from way back. You can't hide. It was from 2016. Internet's a scary place. But it was saying that, hey, the greens are pretty easy. They're not very undulating. It's pretty flat. You think about where New Orleans is, you're under sea level. You're not going to get drastic elevation change, which you know how much I like elevation change. So flatter greens, I think that benefits guys who aren't putting as well. And that fits John Rahm.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think they're very clearly the top team here. You know, although, Sia, I will say this, you know, really any metric you want to run loves Xander and Cantlay. So let me illustrate this for you. So I've got these guys loaded in for, you know, however many rounds that we want. And if we sort every team by their average strokes gain total, let's start at 50 rounds. Well, in the last 50 rounds, Xander and Cantlay, they're number one. Okay, let's go more recent. 40 rounds, Xander Cantlay, number one. Let's go to 30 rounds. Okay, Xander Cantlay, number one. 20 rounds, Xander Cantlay, number one. How about even closer? 10 rounds, Xander Cantlay, number three. So basically, however you want to slice this, and I know we have come on here for two straight weeks and we've talked about Patrick Cantlay and his struggles. So now I ask you, what do we do now? We've got Xander and Cantlay, they're 11,700. The models are going to continue to love them for a long time. What do we do this week?
So you can only afford one team in this range, and that's barely. Like, it's really hard to make teams this week. And as you guys know, I've done a few, and it's really, really difficult to even have one of these teams at the top the way the pricing is. But with that said, I mean, you're right about, you know, the last 50 rounds, last 40 rounds, last 30 rounds and all of that. But also, if you were to factor in recent play on both people's part on each team and the fact that John Rahm and Ryan Palmer are defending champions 2019, because we didn't have this in 2020. I mean, and by the way, they're number two in total strokes gained here. So they're right behind Xander. So it's a matter of very minute differences at the end of the day. I'm going to go ahead and lean on the recent form for both John Rahm and Ryan Palmer versus specifically Patrick Cantlay. And that's why I'm going to give them the edge.
Okay, fair enough. Let's before we move on to the 10K range, Greg, we'll give you last word on Smith and Leishman. I think these are two Aussies. Well, I know they're two Aussies. I think they are guys that, you know, Cam Smith played well enough at the President's Cup. That was the first time he kind of got exposure to this type of format. Leishman has been doing it forever. I think they're going to be solid. I think they're fairly priced. I'm like a 5 out of 10. I'm like right about average on how I feel about these guys.
Yeah, the biggest thing here is what Sia talked about, how you can't afford both. You can't afford multiple guys in this range. And I love this team because you had Leishman put up a really nice tournament at Masters, and you have Cam Smith, who's been playing. He's just been on a heater for quite some time now. They're not the ball strikers that Rahm and Palmer are, or even Xander and Cantlay. They don't have that tee to green ability. And I think that's important in a week like this, especially you get into some alternate shot. Mark Leishman does not hit a lot of fairways. He didn't hit a lot of fairways at Augusta. He was near the bottom of the field. We remember when he won at the Farmers Insurance Open. I think that was 2 years in 2019, maybe in 2020. Anyway, he had three fairways in the final round and was able to win. So that's a team of scramblers, which could be good. Does it make it hard for them, harder, less likely for them to go low? I don't think it rules out the possibility, but it doesn't feel as comfortable to me as Rahm and Palmer.
The 10K range, Bubba Watson and Scotty Scheffler are $10,900. Tony Finau and Cameron Champ, that is a bomber group, $10,700. Billy Horschel, the only man to win this event twice, once as an individual, once as a team member, is paired with Sam Burns. He's $10,500. Danny Willett, Terrell Hatton, $10,300. Chris Kirk, Brendan Todd, $10,100. Sia, where are you headed here in the 10K range?
I'm headed to guys that I lean on quite a bit. They're kind of boring, but boring gets it done in some tournaments, including last week and potentially this week. Chris Kirk and Brendan Todd. Okay. First of all, you're getting a discount to the extent they're at the low end of the 10K range. And we know Chris Kirk has been very, very good lately. We know he's good on Pete Dye courses. I just think that these guys are going to be reliable. They're definitely going to make the cut. And Chris Kirk, he's been making top 25s at a pretty staggering rate, and Brendan Todd's game has been a little up and down, but he played well enough last week to be worth rostering, and I think he's going to be a fine partner to Chris Kirk.
I want to get your opinion on this, Greg, because I also like this team quite a bit. Now, they are like, if you could mold these guys into one physical golfer, they'd be really great, right? So I've now broken this out here on the cheat sheet where I've got individual golfers here. Chris Kirk's strength is his ball striking, and he's even pretty good around the greens, and his one weakness, he's not terrible at it, but he is weakest with the putter. Well, Brendan Todd's best asset is his putter, and then he's great or decent around the greens, and he struggles off the tee. He struggles on approach. And I'm wondering if it is a valid strategy to try to find guys that could mold into one great player, or if we would prefer them to both be, I don't know, okay or solid in three categories or something like that.
I think you got to take it a little bit deeper than just simply the strokes gain metric in this case. But here's the deal. We discussed the Matthew Wolf kind of fingerprint and how that will have an effect on Colin Morikawa. In this case, Brendan Todd's weakness of strokes gain off the tee comes from distance.
Right.
He's extremely accurate. So he's not going to put Chris Kirk in really problematic situations. And at the same time, Brendan Todd is fairly accurate with irons. So I think there's a solid that makes sense. I don't worry about him hurting his partner. What I worry about is, are they going to have the firepower? Are they going to be able to make the birdies to get to that 22, 26 under number? So that's one thing I worry about. The other thing I worry about, and as I looked at this team, we talked about it last night. I love this team. I really do. I don't like the price very much. And I feel like that price is kind of, I'd be interested to see what Sia thinks about this. It's almost no man's land in that if you're going to roster someone in the 11K range, I don't think you can really roster a guy in the 10K range and at least feel comfortable. I mean, you're really throwing darts at the bottom if you do that. So now when I look at the 10K range, I'm almost looking at that as a place where you're going to, if you're in this range, you're likely starting your roster here, not you're passing on Rahm and Palmer. You're passing on the 11K guys. So I don't think that's a team that I'd want to start with. be a great secondary team. And if they were a little bit cheaper, I'd be all over them. But that's my that ultimately price is my biggest concern with them.
Yeah. And by the way, I agree. I mean, you can't really do 11K and then 10K and then really do anything other than dip into the very low and mid 6K range. So, you know, one of my teams had John Rahm and Ryan Palmer, and then I immediately went down to the 8K range and still I was almost out of money. I would go a couple low 7,200 guys or 7K guys and then, you know, dip maybe high in the 6K range. It's really problematic. So it's a really good point. If you want to start your team there, that's one thing, but you're going to have a real problem having a guy like, you know, having guys like John Rahm and Ryan Palmer with Chris Kirk and Brendan Todd and getting anybody decent in the 7 to 8K range.
So would either of you guys feel comfortable? Do you think the Bubba Watson, Scotty Scheffler team could fill your A spot? Could that be the place where you start everything with?
I think that team is, I think it's super interesting. I think they're one of the more volatile teams in this range. I think if they get going in the right direction, you know, we've seen Scottie Scheffler shoot a 59. We've seen Bubba Watson get hot at times. And when he's engaged, there's few guys better, or few guys who can make as many birdies, which is really what a lot of this comes down to. But I also think this is a team that could go a bit sideways. So I think I don't mind it. I don't mind starting my team there because I really like the upside that they have. But I think you have to understand they're probably a lot riskier than maybe, I don't know, a Danny Willett, Terrell Hatton team, something like that.
What do you think, Sia? Are you comfortable starting your team with a really aggressive team like that? Or would you go safer with, you know, the Hatton team or maybe even the Todd team?
No, I don't have a problem with that. I think you could even start with the Billy Horschel, Sam Burns team. I mean, you're looking for upside, that you know, Burns, I believe, is from the area. And his game's, I wouldn't say it's coming around, but it's better than it was a couple months ago. And Billy Horschel's obviously been in pretty good form, too. So, and Billy Horschel, I mean, just narrative speaking, he's probably best suited for a team event, or at least in the top five from a team event standpoint. That's just my opinion. So, yeah, I think it's okay to start in the 10K range with any of the teams we mentioned.
Sam Burns, LSU kid.
Sam Burns, LSU kid. The other note I had about that is I tried to just look into a bit of, and I'm showing it now here, Sam, this is Sam Burns round by round. And I was just kind of looking into guys that can gain like four strokes in a round. Like I want upside. And the team that had the most rounds of four plus strokes gained this season was the Horschel Burns team. I think Burns had like 8 of them, which was tied for the most with Terrell Hatton, and Billy Horschel had the other 4. So it makes for an interesting, because like, I mean, that's what you need. You need them to there have been 60 shot at this event, like a couple of them each of the last 2 years. You're going to need to go low. I mentioned that Danny Willett, Terrell Hatton team, Sia, and this one kind of piques my interest. You know, we have seen Hatton play unbelievable rounds and then kind of mediocre rounds. They are one of the few teams up at the top that gain, you know, combined, they gain strokes in all 4 categories. I wonder if Willett can kind of put a plug in Hatton's sour rounds or sour holes and kind of keep them towards the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, I don't love it. I just think Hatton, both Willett and Hatton have been so inconsistent. And Willett, you know, good for him. He's really come around and he's really sort of reinvented himself the last, you know, 6 months or so. But there's enough teams in the 9K range that we'll talk about that I would just take over Hatton and Willett, because I think those teams in the 9K range, A, they're cheaper, but also they're a little bit more reliable.
Okay, let's go to the 9K range because I do find them pretty interesting. So I'll run through these quickly. Homa and Gooch, Hovland and Ventura, Grace and Harold Varner III, Rose and Stenson, Louis and Charles, Keegan and Brendan Steele, Thomas Peters and Tom Lewis, Sung Jae and Benyon, and it rounds out with Joel Damon and Lonto Griffin. Greg, $9,000. Starting to get into some guys that have bigger question marks. What are we doing here?
This is, I think, it's a fascinating range. There's a lot of teams that I like here. There's a lot of teams I like. For one, I like the Homa and Gooch team. I think they've been playing some really, really solid golf. I could see them feeding off of one another very easily. And they're kind of up and comers. They kind of are on a similar path in their career where they're having improved year. You could say Max Homa's year last year was his breakout year, but this is another one that I find to be kind of close to a breakout year. And I think it's definitely Taylor Gooch's best year on the PGA Tour so far. So I love that team. The other team, you talk about mixing and matching players, is right below them, Hovland and Ventura. those two guys, Christopher Ventura is another Oklahoma State guy. So you have that connection, which is nice, but he's what, second on tour strokes gained putting, which is a weakness for Hovland. So you combine Hovland's ball striking with a great putter like Ventura, and you add the personal connection. And I think that could be a really interesting team. Sia, do you think guys are going to kind of play away from that team because of Ventura? Do you think there's enough Hovland support out there to make that team popular?
I think there's enough Hovland name recognition and enough conversation over the last year or so about Ventura's upside that I think people will be on them. The problem I have with it is Ventura's just been kind of bad lately. I mean, a lot of miscuts since finishing sixth way back at the Sanderson Farms. I guess that would be last October. I mean, he doesn't have a single finish within the top 35 since that time. So it's like pretty concerning to me. As much as I like Hovland, I think I might have to pivot off those guys. But to your question, I think they'll get some interest for sure.
Okay, Sia. So in this 9K range, we've got Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson. We've got Louis and Charles. Is there anybody else in here that would be part of your focus?
Yeah, I mean, keeping with my team, boring, Chris Kirk and Brandon Todd, Keegan Bradley and Brandon Steele. I mean, these guys are the classic ball strikers. They've been very good lately. Keegan, five of the last six tournaments, he's been inside the top 30, including a 10th at the API. Brandon Steele, he was kind of bad at Valero, but even so, he made the cut. He's made nine cuts in a row, including a third at the Honda Classic, a fourth at the Sony back in January. And by the way, if you look at the total strokes gained on Rick Rungood, I mean, they're in the top 20 there, so they're grading out just fine there. And by the way, just a note, if you were to sort that instead of total strokes gained, this is on Rick Rungood, and you did it by tee to green, boom, all of a sudden they jump to seventh. Not surprising, right? Because that takes out putting. So I think the upside is definitely there for those two guys. And I do want to mention, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you're absolutely right. They rank very highly in strokes gained tee to green, and Brendan Steele has actually found a hair of a putter recently. So he has actually gained strokes putting in three consecutive starts. He's gained about 10 or 11 over those 12 rounds or so. So if he can continue that, if they can marry that tee to green stuff, I like where you're headed here, Sia.
So the only other team I want to mention in the 9K range, and I think this is a team that really won't be on a lot of people's radar because they don't really have a lot of PGA Tour stats. Tom Lewis does, but not so much Thomas Peters. Thomas Peters and Lewis, I think at 9,200 is super sneaky. They're not going to get a lot of ownership. Maybe they don't deserve it, but Peters has been playing well in Europe. He had in on the PGA Tour, he's played well. He's had two top 15s. Granted, those were at the Puerto Rico Open and at Corrales, but over in Europe, he had a top 15 at the Saudi International and a top 15 at the Qatar Masters. So he's in very good form with four top 15s in a row. And Tom Lewis, he's made four cuts in a row. I mean, I think Thomas Peters, really, we thought he was going to be something else, and maybe he'll still achieve that upside that we thought he might have a few years ago, but he's playing really well, and he can't finish tournaments, but maybe this is the right tournament for him then, because he has a Tom Lewis along his side, and maybe that's going to calm his nerves and avoid that bad round.
There's a lot of guys that can't finish tournaments. I won't hold that against him. The big team we have to talk about, Greg, here is Rose and Stenson, who Rose makes a lot of noise by going out and going nuts in the opening rounds of the Masters, and he ends up finishing seventh. Stenson played better there, but that's kind of a course that, experience matters quite a bit, because Stenson's been pretty terrible recently, and Rose hasn't been all that great. But these guys have that magic. They're 6-2 together in Ryder Cups when they've played as partners. So I think there's going to be a lot of head scratching at the $9,500 mark when guys get to Rose and Stenson.
Yeah, this is it's a cool team. I'm glad this team is together, because I'm very curious to see what they do. And the reasons for that, many of them you just mentioned. You know, they have that Ryder Cup connection. What a great tournament here influence Padraig Harrington and putting these veterans on the team. That brings up the storyline that Kyle Porter has brought up on many occasions about the Europeans getting caught with some of these veterans that have been so good in the Ryder Cup, and they kind of give them one chance too many and they get caught. He's talked about that for, as long as I've known him now at this point. So I'm very interested to see how that turns out. There's not a lot of reason to be going for this team other than their Ryder Cup record and maybe the performance at Masters. But again, it was such, for Justin Rose in particular, it was such a scrambling performance. It wasn't great tee to green. It wasn't great with his irons or off the tee. He was missing a lot to the right. I think he's a little underneath with his golf swing. And Henrik Stenson hasn't shown his typical ball striking prowess. So I feel like this is a team that you would expect to be great ball strikers, and they're not right now. So I worry about it. The one question is this magic, right? Is something going to come just because these two guys are together and it's going to go great? And that's basically, I mean, it's almost beyond analysis at that point, and it's right. A coin flip. So I lean towards no on them.
We're going to talk about, because we're going to get down to the cheaper guys, and we're going to talk about who can find that magic and all that stuff. But to put this into perspective, Henrik Stenson, noted one of the best ball strikers of all time, currently 193rd in strokes gained tee to green. He's 209th off the tee. That is not good, gentlemen. Not good at all. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go down to the 8K range, and then we'll keep going. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And we're back. What does a World Series winning executive do after running a Major League Baseball team for 18 years? Well, they start a podcast. David Sampson hosts Nothing Personal with David Sampson, a daily podcast dedicated to giving you the truth about sports, business, and entertainment. Step inside the front office and really get to know sports. Nothing Personal with David Sampson is available every weekday wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, it's just business. It's nothing personal. I like that. We should have like a snappy little thing like that. Like, it's not the fairway, but it's not the rough. It's the first cut. Like something. Ooh, like,
yeah. I don't know. Little tagline. We need a little subtitle. The First Cut Podcast. Enter slogan here. I like that.
Or Rick, like, maybe you can sing it for us. How about that?
I don't mind the first cut.
Yeah, that is our tagline. I don't mind the first cut, which is what we go for, that people don't mind it. Okay, $8,000 range. Dylan Fratelli, Kevin Streelman lead it off. It goes down to Roberto Castro and Cameron Tringale. I was stoked to see it. I was looking this up, and I was like, where is Charlie Hoffman? I got to get Charlie Hoffman. He is absolutely perfect for this format. He makes a ton of birdies. He's volatile. It's all good. And then I saw he's playing with Nick Watney, who has missed 12 consecutive cuts.
One of my favorite quotes of all time is, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. And this is just in the embodiment of that, because no offense against Nick Watney. I mean, he probably will turn it around at some point, but he has been really, really bad. So I don't really see a scenario where you can roster Charlie Hoffman. I mean, if you want to get into the narrative building, feel free to do that. That's not for me, at least not with this particular duo. So I'm skipping right over them, and I'm going, I actually don't like this range that much. So I'm going really low in the 8K range. I'm considering Doug Gim and Justin Sub, but I kind of want your and Greg's opinion on that, because I'm a little shaky on Justin Sub, and I'm wondering if there's a little bit too much hype on him. I mean, the last three PGA events, he's not finished higher than 28th. And by the way, two of those are Puerto Rico and Corrales. Last week, he had a Korn Ferry Tour event. He finished 61st. And there's plenty of guys in this very tournament that finished really well in that same Korn Ferry Tour event that are a lot cheaper with decent teammates. So I understand, you know, ball striking is probably there for those two. I may roster them. I need you guys to convince me. I'll just mention the other team I'm considering is Roberto Castro and Cameron Tringale. That's more a Cameron Tringale thing. I don't know if I can come around on Roberto Castro. He's been very inconsistent, and high finishes aren't really his thing. But those are the two I'm considering here.
The Doug Gim Justin Suh is interesting. That's a comfortable pairing. If you look at the last 50 rounds, they don't have that many. They don't have that many measured rounds together. So we're working with a smaller sample size on them, but they are fourth in birdie average. And I think birdies are just going to be, you got to make a ton of them and you got to kind of get lucky that you're making them at the right time. So Greg, okay, if Sia doesn't like this 8K range as much, do you feel differently about it?
Well, there's a lot of reason to have concern in a range like this. This is the range where you have, one leg's longer than the other, right? You feel like there's one guy that's going to get carried throughout the entirety of the tournament. Almost every player in this range that you find interesting, you highlighted Charlie Hoffman. You could also look at a Matt Wallace. You could look at Jason Kokrak. They all have a guy with them that you have a major question about. But there's probably going to be some great success out of one of these teams because these guys, look, the guys that are bad PGA Tour players right now, guys that are struggling on the PGA Tour are great players and they can still go out there and make birdies and they can still go out there and contribute. They can put the ball in play. So I think it's something where you're guessing a little bit on the weaker player performing really well. So that being said, I'm very interested in Matt Wallace and Graham McDowell. Matt Wallace has been playing great golf of late. He was third at the Valero Texas Open, 34th at the Masters, and tied 18th last week. So maybe this is too many weeks in a row. That's a possibility. But he's been hitting the ball beautifully. And I am a big fan of that. Graham McDowell, although there's not really a statistic you'll find of late that you like with Graham McDowell, but he's one of the best putters. It's a great putting stroke. I think he's a great putter and I think he could fill it up on greens like this. And I could see him and Matt kind of going out there and having some fun and feeding off of each other a little bit. So that is the guy who's kind of a wild card for me that I think could really get a spark from Matt Wallace and his elite ball striking. Cause it has been elite. The putter is the thing that let him down. So that's an interesting team to me.
Yeah, Wallace has certainly not been the question mark in that group for sure. He's been absolutely awesome. I think the team that most people are going to want to go to, Sia, is the Scott Brown, Kevin Kisner group. You know, they check off the boxes of they're like actually friends off the course. It's a very comfortable pairing. They're one of, I believe, only four teams that have played together all 3 years in this event. They've finished runner up in a playoff. They've finished, I'm doing this off the top of my head, I believe it's 15th and 5th in the other two. So they are constantly there. Neither of them playing all that well at the moment. But does this, we keep saying that word magic. Can we spark some magic here?
Maybe. I mean, this is definitely one of the teams I was considering in the 8K range. I'm not really there yet with them. I mean, I think just from a roster construction standpoint, I'm more comfortable going into the upper 7K range or the low 8K range. But, you know, Scott Brown is one of those guys that I remember back in the day when I was first, you know, betting on golf, you know, he'd be a guy that would just pop in the first round. Like he might be a first round leader play for me or something. And he'd have a couple rounds that were really good. You're right. His comfort on this course is significant. So, I mean, and his comfort with Kevin Kisner is significant. I don't mind this team at all. I'm not sure I'm going to roster them, but I wouldn't tell anybody not to roster them.
I'm like a 3 out of 10 in terms of excitement. I think that this is kind of a weird range. And I think a lot of people are going to click that name. They're those names, Brown and Kisner, whether it's based on the history, whether they like Kevin Kisner, whether whatever it is and whatever their ownership is, I think it's going to be too much. So I'll probably take a pass there, but let's pop on down to that 7K range. And this is where we start to, if you thought one leg was longer than the other in the 8K range, Greg, we just got two short legs here in the 7K range. It starts with Mav McNealy and Joseph Bramlett. It goes all the way down to Tom Hoagie and Bo Hostler. And this is where I start to question how some of these guys even found each other.
Yeah, well, this is the I'll sign up and you can put me with whoever. I think that's where you get this group. But who knows? These guys are all friends out here. So there's definitely that possibility as well. But I think this range and price is a big factor here. But I can find a little bit more comfort in this range than in past ranges. And I'll start with at, I believe, 7,500. And it's Matthew Neesmith and Chase Seifert, right? That team is, I believe both legs are the same length. And I think they're I think they're underpriced, which I haven't found anybody that I thought was underpriced in this range. But so I feel very, very comfortable playing these guys for this price. Just to give you a little bit of an idea here on what you've seen out of Chase Seifert, you've seen a lot of cuts in a row, five cuts made in a row. The last two events haven't been great, but he's had some nice performances. And, you know, at the Valero Texas Open, Sunday was bad and he ended up in 44th. At the RBC Heritage, he never had that round where he really got it going, but he did come in 42nd there. And that followed 18th in Corrales, 3rd at the Honda Classic, and 15th at the Puerto Rico Open. And Chase Seifert's strength is his iron play. And you look at Matthew Neesmith, and he is the exact same thing. His strength is iron play. He too, just like Seifert, has had a couple of, you know, better than 50th, but not really top five or any finishes that are worth reading off for you here. But he is on the PGA Tour. He's seventh approaching the green this year and 25th tee to green. And I could see that team getting hot and being kind of having a little bit of a magical run this week.
Yeah, I had two teams circled in this range, Greg. That was one of them. So if you do last 50 rounds, again, these are combined averages. Neesmith and Seifert are fourth in this field in strokes gained approach. And I actually think it goes even better than that, because Neesmith is an elite ball striker. He's seventh on tour in strokes gained approach. When you get a guy who is a top 10 player in a very important statistic like that in this range, I love it. And then you throw in Chase Seifert, who, yeah, you mentioned it, five cuts in a row, T3 at Honda, playing well enough to get it done. Okay. See, Greg hit my one team. Let's see if you can find the other team that I had circled.
I'd be shocked, because I'm kind of going off the reservation here a little bit, but is it Sepp Straka and Josh Teeter by any chance?
It is not, but is that a team that you like, or were you just guessing the team that I liked?
Well, I was hoping it was both, but it's a team that I like. Again, I'm trying to go off the reservation here a little bit. Josh Teeter, he's playing a little bit on the Korn Ferry Tour. He's done fine near the top 25, but on the PGA Tour this calendar year, he's played four tournaments. He's made the cut in all of them. And then you got Sepp Straka, a guy that can get really hot, a ton of upside. And you might say, okay, well, he's got a low floor too, right? Well, he's made four cuts in a row as well. So I think you actually have a really good mix of guys here at the right price, 7,200. I think you're getting, I, by the way, agree with Neesmith and Seifert quite a bit. But I also think Sepp Straka and Josh Teeter have similar upside, believe it or not.
Rick, can I guess? I have two guesses. I want to see if it's not the first one, then I'll default to my second one. I just don't know which one to go with first. I don't know if this is a personal pick. I'm going to save the personal pick for second. And I'm going to go with
personal pick. Save the personal pick.
I'll save the personal pick. I think it's Michael Thompson and Will Gordon.
I think it's Maverick McNealy and Joseph Bramlett.
No, you guys know nothing about
all right.
Me.
No. So, okay. So my second one, now we're getting personal. Doc Redmond and Sam Ryder.
No, Doc Redmond.
That's been tough.
Like, I love Doc. I wish him the best. This has not been a good year for him. He just shot 81-71 last week. As good as Sam Ryder's been, I'm not thrilled about that. No, I'm going with Richie Wierenski and Peter Uihlein. So,
wow, I looked at that team. I'm worried about Uihlein. I'm a little worried about Uihlein.
Uihlein just won the Korn Ferry yesterday.
Uihlein just won the Korn Ferry yesterday
here in Vegas. I followed him around on Thursday. He looked great. He won it. He finished runner up three starts before that. Uihlein's playing well right now. He gets your guy, Richie Wierenski, who has missed three cuts in a row. But I mean, listen, we're down in this range. Two of them were like Florida swing events. I'm not going to kill him for that. So yeah, this is the team that I was pretty focused on. You got a guy.
I got to do a better job following Korn Ferry Tour. Because I should have known that. And I like Peter Uihlein. I've played with him before, and I played around with him at Medalist a couple of years back.
Who won? And
I played really well, and I lost on the first nine by four shots.
Oh,
and
great.
He did. Peter Uihlein did nothing in this round, and he just the wind's blowing 20 miles an hour, and I am doing everything I can to shoot. I think I shot one. I shot 37, and I was thrilled about my form, and he did nothing and shot 33, and it was the easiest thing. He made a birdie on nine. He hit this tee. He tried to hit it over the corner, which I've never even thought about taking this line. And he ends up in the trees. And I'm like, wow, I could, maybe if I make birdie here, I could get really close. I could catch. And he hit this shot out of the trees that I'm confident he cheated because I don't know how he did it. He did
it 4 feet. So. Peter, you line slander here on the first shot.
He must have because it was impossible. No, but in all seriousness, it was just a crazy shot. So he is impressive to watch. He's one of those guys that hits it really solid, really straight, and really far. And his performance the past couple of years has honestly surprised me.
Yeah, and the wins this week or last week in Vegas were no joke. So he had to be flushing it to get it around Paiute in a big way. So yeah, that was the team that I was focused on. Anybody else in this 7K range before we head down to the final range, the super large 6K range?
First of all, before I mention another team, if we could just get a broom to sweep up all the names Greg keeps dropping, that would be great. Oh, another set of names that I think is decent here is, and it depends on how you feel about Will Gordon, but Michael Thompson and Will Gordon, I think is a rosterable team. They won't be high on my list, but I do like them.
All right.
They were one of the names that they've been swept up because they were one of the names I mentioned and it's easy to lose track. But I think you're right because Thompson's been playing well and Will Gordon probably, I mean, he's got to have some pretty high upside. So I think that's a rosterable team too.
Before we get down to the 6K range, there's a lot of names there. And I think we're already in the point where I think, gentlemen, this format breeds a bit of volatility. And I think we have to embrace it. I mean, to put this in very simple terms, Sia, like imagine you and your partner going out and each making six birdies in the best ball format. Like you could make six birdies each and be six under if you make them all on the same hole, or you could make six birdies each and you could be 12 under if you make them on separate holes. And there's a little bit of luck to that. So I think that as we're down here in the 7K, 6K range, I'm not really shying away from guys all that much. I'm kind of embracing it more just because of the nature of this event.
Yeah. And ultimately, I'm looking for guys that are going to potentially make the cut. So I'm looking for some level of consistency, which, of course, you're not really going to get in the 6K range. But, you know, you're picking among the teams that at least have been a little bit more consistent with maybe a touch of upside versus the other teams in the 6K range. A couple teams that I'm focused on, one is more of a dart throw. Scott Piercy and Akshay Bhatia. I've seen Akshay Bhatia shine. Usually it's for one or two rounds, but and Scott Piercy hasn't been terrible lately. He's missing cuts. He's making cuts. He's not really finishing high. But again, in this range, I'm looking for a little bit of upside. I think you might have it there. I might have a couple bucks on them as first round leader with like Keegan Bradley and Brandon Steele. Side note there. The only other team I really like so far is a Roger Sloan and Aaron Baddeley. I mean, Sloan has actually been really good. He had a missed cut at the Valero, but three top 25s before that. And Aaron Baddeley, he's been doing some Korn Ferry Tour stuff and some PGA Tour stuff. And, you know, he's made two PGA Tour cuts in a row. And on the Korn Ferry Tour, I mean, he's been pretty good. In fact, last week at the same tournament you're talking about with Peter Uhlein, he finished fifth, which just from a comparison standpoint, Justin Suh finished 61st. And we know Peter Uhlein finished first. So, I mean, again, that's just 1 week. But I do think Aaron Baddeley is, I mean, we've seen him on the PGA Tour be successful before. So I like that team.
Roger Sloan is actually much better than I thought in terms of these metrics here. He doesn't have as many rounds as other guys, but he's 42nd tee to green. He's 31st in approach. You could have given me 1,000 guesses. I probably wouldn't have gotten there. Greg, $6,000 range. These are very much guys that could have been randomly put together. I mean, literally Matt Every's partner, Tyler McCumber, withdrew. So they slapped him with Charlie Beljon. Like, listen, I don't know if these guys meant to get together, but here we are.
All right. So I got two teams that I'm very reluctantly interested in, but I kind of like it. So Austin Cook and Andrew Landry to me, these are two guys that I confuse from time to time. They are ultimate poppers. You will not see good form recently, but they're guys that have contended and won on the PGA Tour before. And if lightning strikes twice and they both get hot in the same week, you could have a really interesting team. But I think it's unlikely, but that is the definition of embracing the volatility. The next team and I have a question to go along with this, and they kind of stick out to me. I feel like this could be another really volatile team, and it's James Hahn and Martin Trainer, who kind of have my interest. I mean, James Hahn is not too far removed from some really good form, where he was 15th at the Genesis. He was 10th at Waste Management, withdrew from the Honda Classic after a 66 in the first round, which is where the question comes into play, right? Is James Hahn healthy enough to compete? And then Martin Trainer, on the other hand, has not been very exciting, but 73 at the RBC Heritage to miss the cut. Not, you know, he's not shooting 81, but at the same time, he's missing the cut. Then 44th at the Valero Texas Open, and just kind of some boring rounds of golf. But maybe there's a chance he gets it going this week.
I will say this for Martin Trainer. Before the Heritage, he had made two cuts in a row, which was the first time he had done that since March of 2019. So yeah. maybe a bit of a turnaround for Mr. Maybe. Trainer.
We'll look, they're 6,300. That team's 6,300. You're guessing at some point here. And I'm wondering if Hahn maybe is a little underpriced because of the WD. Maybe that's injury. It's probably for a reason, but they kind of have a little bit of interest for me.
There was another team that I liked here. I think it was David Hearn, Seamus Power. Power, again, played well. I think he finished top five last week in Vegas on the Corn Ferry. I watched him for a bit. He is slow beyond my all belief, but he absolutely stripes it. Oh, my God, this guy. I've never seen anybody play any slower. And with David Hearn, who's actually had a good run here. These guys have played together at this event. I wish I had this handy. I would have been a good host if I had this handy. But these guys have played together in the past, and they've played well. I'll pull that up before we get out of here.
David Hearn has some good putting numbers, too. I think he's top 10 on the tour in strokes gained putting.
He's a great putter, which is always handy in these formats. So, see, is there anybody else here in this 10K, or excuse me, 6K range that we should be considering?
I mean, I'm in complete dart throw territory here, but a few names I wrote down because my research said, hey, maybe you want to have one share of these guys. Ben Martin, Chesson Hadley, Mark Hubbard, Sebastian Kaplan, and Bo Van Pelt and Luke List. Of those three, I think the only one I really like in terms of maybe rostering is Bo Van Pelt and Luke List.
Greg, anybody else as well?
You love Luke List, yeah. No, I've got enough dart throws out there. I mean, the thing, you get blamed for these things, right? And somebody's going to tweet at me and say, hey, can I blame the real GFD for this pick? And I understand it and I embrace it and I love it. But I mean, throwing another name out there, it's more work for whoever's sweeping these names up. Right, Sia?
Thank you for extending that analogy. I do.
Yeah. let's let it roll.
David Hearn and Seamus Power, at least they finished T10 together in 2018. I feel like they've played together another time, but I couldn't find it. I don't know where that stat went, but they did play together. They did finish in the top 10 here.
All right. I like it.
Gentlemen, any closing thoughts before we get out of here? I mean, we've got this is our one opportunity. I like Greg. I really like the alternate shot, right? Like that to me, where a guy can put another guy this is nothing but an individual sport. And when you have to play another guy's ball from wherever it lands, like that to me gets me all fired up.
Yeah, it's exciting. And it applies a new pressure. At the same time, it relieves pressure from some guys. So by the time we get to, and it's great how they do it on the Friday round, cut day, and the Sunday round, where it's your time to win. I think it'll make it much more interesting for the viewer when we're watching on Sunday and on Friday night. Watching alternate shot, it's easier. It's more similar to what we see week to week, where there's one ball in play for each team. So I think that's an exciting element. And it also, it really highlights the strategy where when you have Matthew Wolf and Colin Morikawa playing together, they're both playing their own ball side by side, comparing scores. There's much less team chemistry that's needed. The only thing you need is, well, don't birdie the same holes and don't bogey the same holes. Let's ham and egg it a little bit. Alternate shot's not that way. We have to work together as a team. We have to pick what tee if we're going to tee off on odd holes or even holes. How does all that strategy play out? The team element is highlighted in the foursomes much more.
absolutely is. I was able to vamp long enough. T5 for Seamus Power and David Hearn in 2019. T10 in 2018. I was going to find that before we got out of here. Sia Najad, thank you very much as always. You can find Sia on Twitter at Sia Najad. You can find Greg Ducharme on Twitter at The Real GFD. Producer Jacob does all the hard work behind the scenes, so thank you very much, Jacob. And you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.